You might want to introduce yourselves and your role in your production first.
Hi, I'm Kayleen. I was one of the writers, performers, and co-directors of Family Duet.
I'm Paul Ray, and I did the same job.
Okay. Was there any stimulus or inspiration behind this production? What was your initial idea or topic or theme that you had?
Well, Family Duet was a kind of crazy proposition that I proposed to my family members. This was one reason was because the Esplanade were programming a season that was about reflecting on a past show, and they had asked us to think about duets, which was something that we had done at the Esplanade in 2005. So back then it was all about myself and Paul. We were married and we had just had a child, you see, just had a baby. So that production was all about that, what it was like to be two in a world of three. So in a kind of crazy follow-up, almost 9 years later, I thought, hey, what would it be like if we put everyone on stage, you know, what has happened since then, the kind of sequel to that show. And you know, now we have two kids, and I decided to bring in my mom too, because you know, she's quite into acting these days. Yeah, so you know, that was the kind of crazy idea behind it all. And I think one of the things that I wanted to see if it was possible was to capture this, yeah, you know, something about, well, not just about family, but also to capture a moment in time in a family, you know, especially when the kids are young, you know, they have this fairly magical quality about them, you know, and I was just wondering if it's possible to work with that and to bring that onto stage without it being cutesy, and you know.
What was the process talking to your children and your mom and bringing them onto stage?
Oh, they were really into it. they were super keen. They thought it would be a really fun project to do. So they were up for it from the beginning, you know.
Were they creators too?
Yeah. Everyone was a co-creator in the piece. You know, they were super keen. Paul was the one who needed a bit of convincing. I think he felt very pressurized because all of us said, come on, let's do it. And he was just not sure.
As well as the Skype conversation, was that included in
that
from the very start, or was that, you know, in the middle and you decided to have your mom in as well?
I think we were interested in having my mom in the picture because part of our family life is about the fact that I'm from the UK, and so especially for our daughters, their sense of their extended family is culturally and geographically split. So it's, but that said, you know, Summer especially, who's now six, is a member of a paid up member of the Skype generation. In that, when Kayleen gave birth to Lola in 2004. I was able to take a picture in the hospital which had Wi-Fi and email it to my parents straight away. But by the time Summer was born in the same hospital 2 years later, we were able to Skype with my parents in the hospital. So we have a kind of family portrait of the four of us with my mum and dad in the background on Skype. And so, you know, for them, the girls, Skype is ordinary. It's just that it's always been around, and this is an integral way in which they build and develop their family relationships. But the other thing is, we were kind of interested in just proliferating the different kinds of relationships or permutations that there are. It didn't have to be called Family Duet, but since the first duet performance that Kayleen has mentioned, We've done several other performances that fall broadly under this duets category. We did Duets 2, which was just me, which was about parenting, and then Tree Duet, which was originally just me and a tree, but then expanded to include Kayleen and a pianist, and Sky Duet, which was an audio work on the Singapore Flyer. So we are interested in proliferating the number of components in the show, but nevertheless retaining a focus on the one-to-one relationships. And so having that, although that didn't always come across or indeed remain in Family Duet, there was always some sense in which one of us was relating to another, or as Kayleen's mum Kim said at the beginning of the show, that the three parts each told a story of the whole family from the point of view of two members of that family. The first part was from the point of view of myself and Kayleen, the second part from the point of view of Kim and my mum Fiona, and the third from the point of view of the girls, Lola and Summer. So there's a kind of formal reason for also wanting there to be that particular combination of individuals.
Okay, thank you for that. Do you have, what are your main artistic or theoretical influences, if there are any?
Sorry, what was the question?
Main artistic or theoretical influences on the work. Do you all look at any books or any artist influence?
I mean, I guess there are the longer term influences on Spell 7's style, and then there would be the particular inspirations that we looked at in the course of creating Family Duet. So Kayleen and I studied drama at Bristol University in the early 90s, and there's quite a dynamic so-called live art scene in the UK at that time, which included artists like Forced Entertainment and Desperate Optimists, who now make films but were then making theatre, and others, and of course also a US influence by companies like the Worcester Group and also Goat Island. And so this general approach to devising theatre was quite influential on us, and I'd say that we've probably moved away from it looking too much like that work, but that was the starting point.
Okay.
As for the actual performance, we didn't have a specific point of reference. There has been a general shift in recent years in experimental theatre towards including a lot of non-performers of various kinds. But I say this is more context than inspiration. The work of the German company Rimini Protocol, who work with, do sort of almost like documentary theatre, with people who work in particular industries. For example, they did a performance in Singapore which took place on a truck, and the performers were the truck drivers, and everyone in the audience was seated in a specially adapted container in the back of the truck. But also companies that have started to use children in, well, you could say in non-cutesy ways, or you could say, you know, simply as people in their own right. Tim Etchells of Forced Entertainment did a piece with teenagers in Belgium, which was quite confrontational. It was only adults were allowed in the audience, but all the performers were under 15, and that was a very sort of direct mode of having teenagers sort of address adults. There's a Italian company, Societas Raffaele Sanzio, which does quite extreme performances, very powerfully image-based performances, and they often use children for parts of their shows, dressed up in weird ways or seeming to be in positions of both vulnerability or power. But I wouldn't say that we were aiming to create that kind of theatre. It's just a general trend towards expanding what kind of people might simultaneously be on stage and be doing stuff. We did look at a few things, but they were quite random. Like, we watched all the videos of, what's the name of that singer? His name I've already forgotten, who performed at the Esplanade. Grimes. Grimes is this sort of Canadian self-taught singer who just has these very kind of quirky videos where she goes. She often, they're either the really kind of low production value and sort of slightly crappy looking, or she will go into environments and just sort of like at a American football game or a monster truck rally, and just sing her songs and film herself being surrounded by people who aren't really aware that she's filming them in a pop video. I don't know why we looked at that, but the girl seemed to like it, and I think it was the homemade thing and the and just the sort of everyday environments that we were interested in.
Talking about everyday, you had a few objects on stage, like photo frames, various kind of objects that you had on stage. Is there a reason behind that, or was that the set design that you all came up with, or was it just placed there? You know, how was the process like for the set design?
The set design, was there one?
there is something on stage.
Well, you know, it was about family, and one of the things was about home, and it was about moving house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just seemed logical to start bringing in stuff from the house. And, you know, we were actually moving from one house to another. So this was actually all part of the process, the real life process as well. But we just took the objects and we... from our house, and then, you know, when you bring it into a rehearsal space, the meaning kind of changes, you know, and we thought that was interesting. And also, I think one of the reasons why we had a lot of stuff from our house, besides it being cheaper, was that, you know, it was to create a kind of environment that is comfortable for the children to... you know, to perform in the kind of place that they're familiar with. These are their objects. This is stuff that they do. So so it's in a way, it's to help the performance.
Well, also because, you know, relative to the kind of world that Kayleen or I might project ourselves out into in the course of the day, and going to work and moving around, or indeed traveling abroad. The world of the young child is quite constrained spatially, but of course that it's not constrained in terms of imagination or activity. So we were very aware that a child's world is very much a world of that's at some level kind of domestic. It's domestic, but it's also about the manipulation of objects. I mean, they very much encounter the world through objects. You know, they have more stuff. They have toys and they have more clothes than us and all this kind of stuff, but also because, you know, learning or becoming socialized into the world is a process of learning to handle and grapple with objects, you know, right from the small hands learning to hold things, or, you know, even to hold a pencil or a pen to write or draw. Is a means by which children act upon the world. They're able to kind of make their mark or to change their environment in order to adapt it to themselves. So we wanted the proliferation of objects, although in the end it wasn't particularly messy, but we wanted it to reflect the fact that the family life is often a life mediated through the exchange or use of objects.
Thank you for that. Do you have a target audience in mind other than, you know, families coming to watch?
I don't think we had a target audience in mind, and I think that was the problem.
Well, you're consciously, you know, communicating anything of importance that you thought would... something that they can bring home to, or sometimes you can leave the theatre thinking about after your show.
For families, you mean?
Yeah, for the families. Or for your target audience, or the audience that had come for your show.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't think we made it with a target audience in mind. I mean, what do you think, Paul? I think it was a bit like...
But that, why do you think that was a problem?
Well, I think that might have been a reason why the show didn't sell so well.
But do you just mean from a marketing point of view?
Yeah, from a marketing point of view. I think we wanted to make a show that was open enough that, you know, anyone could come and watch it. We didn't want to make a family show. We didn't want to make, like, a show for families. We wanted to make something that was open enough because, you know, everyone has a family or has been a part of a family. And, you know, we wanted people to find something that within the show that could resonate with that part of their lives. I guess in terms of marketing, I think it was a bit, I don't know, that part for me didn't, I think it was hard to sell for some reason.
Well, I guess because we have a, you know, that in principle we're interested in creating a work that anyone can watch. And for me, one of the interesting things was that I think that we at least partly succeeded in that. But we're not very good at creating a publicity copy that anyone can read or publicity images that anyone would be attracted to. So, you know, I guess that it was a little... Or even talking about the work or conceiving of the work in a way that is particularly populist. I think we were caught a little between... the show that we wanted to make and the way that we go about I'm not even sure that selling the show is the right word, but presenting it to a potential audience.
Okay. You want to talk about the process from ideation towards putting things onto the page and then from the page to the stage? How did it work?
Well, it certainly didn't go from the page to the stage.
Okay, how are the songs, you know, with the children involved in the creation of the songs as well, or certain lines that they had, it felt like it came from them. So just
most of what you saw came from them. You know, whatever they said, it was from them, with a few edits.
That's a bit of an overstatement. If we're talking about the show as a whole.
I think maybe we should talk about the creative process, right? How,
yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
In the first rehearsal.
Who started the writing? Who came up with the words? And how was it like? How many sessions of creative?
Well, I think the point is that the words are not really the main, they're not the main thing. We didn't start by writing. We started in the rehearsal room by doing a series of different kinds of activities.
So it was just devising and memorizing.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a script?
No, there was writing, but it came in later on. Okay. It came in partway through the process and continued to be revised as the rehearsals progressed.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember that, Summer is only just learning to read, and so... at some level, you simply can't make a show that is too literary or is too writerly. It has to be something that's devised in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we talk a bit more then about the activities that we did at the start of the process? What do you remember of them now?
I think even before we... Even before we went into a rehearsal, we had that, you know, we just had the kind of jamming session at home. We just threw ideas around, right? And, we thought, okay, it'd be nice to play this song, it'd be nice to do this, kind of that, you know, that kind of...
Yeah, actually our first few rehearsals were at home, and we actually continued to have some rehearsals at home because... You know, the domestic environment was part of the show, in a sense. But yeah, we started by making a long list of all the songs that we liked, say, to listen to In the car, you know, the girls get, especially get really into particular songs for a period of time, and then they listen, they want to do it over and over and over again, and they have, you know, requests and that kind of thing. So that went into a long list, and then
I think we were also trying to make some references to the previous duets. So from the start, I think we already wanted to have that conversation between me and Lola about the previous duets as a kind of introduction. So there were a few of those things that we kind of already decided.
And then the other thing we would do is basically just before a rehearsal, we'd kind of look around the house and pull out a few objects that we thought had some sort of theatrical potential, like the exercise ball, which is one of the very first
mm-hmm.
things that we took. And it would literally be quite last minute, just sort of run around and grab a few things and take them to the rehearsal and see what you know, see what happened with them. As for the texts, you know, they have different points of origin. Kayleen's mum wrote her story, and we edited it very little. She actually wrote it. She actually wrote it for a TNS project. We stole it since they didn't seem interested in it. We thought that it would be interesting, and obviously it fitted very well thematically. Some of the texts came from interviews that I did. So at near the beginning of the performance, there's a recording of an interview between Summer and myself. So that's one of several that we did, just like that, just sitting in her bedroom with my iPhone recording. And then there would be others where I would sit at the table and in the house and transcribe as they interviewed each other. And then those would go through a lot of edits and changes and adaptations and generally cutting down. But when it came to the World Condo scene, which is the third part of the performance, it really started from Summer having a strong sense that there were various announcements that she would like to make to the world, and she thought that maybe if she... a good way of getting the world to listen to her would be to build this world condo and have everyone go there. And that's just something that she, you know, this wasn't in relation to the show, this was just something that she developed as an idea, you know, in her life. And so we decided to take that as the starting point. But obviously, some parts are written and scripted and memorized quite precisely, especially during my and Kayleen's scenes. And then, but by the time you get to the World Condo, actually it is also scripted quite precisely, but it's also open enough to allow for a lot of interventions and deviations.
Okay, thanks for that. Are there any artistic or performance challenges that you had from when you were moving from your house and rehearsal and then going on to the space?
From the rehearsal room to the theatre?
Yeah, from your house, from wherever that you were rehearsing at home, to the theatre.
I mean, whenever you move into the theatre, there's always the technical issues.
Mm.
I guess the sense of the audience became more real for them. But I don't think there were like major things that happened, because I think we always rehearsed in, you know, in the space, in the size of the space.
Mm, so you had the space out when we came there.
Okay.
Yeah, we had to, because we really, you know, my main reason for being a bit doubtful about the project to start with, because I felt like we could rehearse like mad for months, but even then, until opening night, we would have no idea how the girls would react in front of an audience, and that it could be a disaster, or indeed worse than that, that it could be quite difficult and perhaps, you know, upsetting for them. So we did everything we could to sort of prepare them by giving them a very clear sense of the space right from the beginning. And I mean one other thing is that one of the most difficult things about doing these shows is extremely tiring moving all the stuff back and forth, because we were rehearsing in spaces on the university campus that we booked, but we couldn't keep stuff there. And in any case, half the stuff that we were using in the show was stuff we also needed in our house. So we were literally, in addition to moving house halfway through the process, we also committing ourselves to sort of removing house every time we had a rehearsal. We would pile all this stuff, ridiculous amounts of furniture and objects of all sorts, into our tiny car, and we'd be completely crammed to the gills, and then drive to the thing. So it was actually a huge operation. Just kind of beginning and ending rehearsal was a lot of carrying of equipment. We were very pleased when we could finally, in that final production week, just take all the stuff to the theatre and leave it there. It was the first time that we didn't have to bookend the rehearsals with this really exhausting and troublesome process of like doing this complicated jigsaw puzzle of fitting people and stuff into and out of the car every time.
Were there any training that you had with the children? Like, you know, when actors are coming in, you train them vocally and stuff like that. Do you have any exercises with them? Or you just let them be?
Yeah, no, we didn't. We didn't train.
not train, but, you know, you go through a little training before that, preparation work.
No, I mean, you know, no, we didn't.
No, you didn't. Oh, okay. I thought you did.
Well, Lola has some experience, being in a couple of Wild Rice pantomimes, and so Kayleen's mum has experience being in several TNS shows, including October. Actually, between them, Lola and Kim have much more experience of performing than us, in that they've done long runs to large audiences, whereas although we've made theatre for a long time, we always do short runs to small audiences.
About the Skype call? Do you like collaborate with your mom and ask whether that will be alright, and you know, time zone and all that?
She came over earlier in the year, and so we had some, we didn't know how we were going to include her.
Mm-hmm.
And
when was the decision made
to include her? We always knew that we wanted to include her, but it was quite a casual arrangement. You know, it's, you know how families, it's not like we're kind of, you know, auditioning for someone to play the mother, you know, a professional actress to play the mother. It's more like, hey mum, maybe when you come over, you can come to a few rehearsals and we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Okay.
But then in a way, the rehearsals were an extension of our family life also. So when we had the rehearsals with her, we weren't quite sure what we would do. We taught her some of the dances that we had choreographed at the time, and then Kayleen got her to read out this story that she had written, and we did a couple of recordings of it just for the sake of having it on tape, as it were. I should also say that the Skype call was not live in the end.
Oh, okay.
We tried it live in the rehearsal room at the Esplanade a few days before the show, but the connection was too unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, we changed it.
Right.
What night did you see the performance?
Oh.
Was it, or when did you, we did three shows. It was Friday night, Saturday matinee, and Saturday evening.
Saturday evening, I think.
Okay.
No, I saw the matinee show. Afternoon one.
Okay.
But I thought it was live.
We made one change that we made from Friday to Saturday was to change that it's hard to explain, but on the video it's we do that slightly differently, and I think it's a bit more apparent in that it's not so live. But actually, just since you mentioned that, in light of your earlier question about problems, I think one and the issue of how the girls would respond to the audience and training,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the the plus of working with the girls is that they are very inventive, and you know, they can be very charming. Of course, in rehearsals, they're not always very charming by any means. But when it comes to performances, the challenge is that they're not very predictable. So the matinee performance was a completely different performance from the two evening performances, that where they had much more energy and they were much less self-conscious and they were much more engaged. Although Kayleen said earlier that it didn't sell well, actually Friday and Saturday night were more or less sold out. It was the matinee that didn't sell so well, but with fewer people in the audience, they became much more aware of individuals in the audience. And I think they were tired, you know. I think we, in, given the chance, we wouldn't do two shows in the same day again. Yeah, that really affected the kind of performance that was produced. So it's the consistency is one of the difficulties. And I'd say that, you know, we all have runs where some shows go better than others, but I'd say that I probably haven't done a run, even this short, where one performance has felt so different from the other two.
Could you outline some of the ways you have allocated your precious time for rehearsal, or was it, you know, an hour a day with the children for this scene and maybe next scene? How do you allocate time for your rehearsal process?
We had a schedule, so I think we were rehearsing about three times a week, sometimes four towards the end, and we just break it down into scenes and rehearse like we would normally.
Okay, alright.
But the timings were weird because, especially with the girls needing to be up very early in the morning and getting tired reasonably quickly, the rehearsals, we would often have a what's perhaps by other standards a slightly odd rehearsal schedule, which is like we would rehearse say 6 till 8:30 in the evening.
Okay.
And but then often that would get eaten into because we would like meet at the rehearsal space and then we'd eat a packed dinner and then we get started. And at weekends we would rehearse longer, but even there's a limit to how long they can rehearse.
Kind of attention spans, and you know, they can't concentrate, you know, they'd rather be doing other things. So yeah, so that was challenging, you know, trying to focus.
Because you guys are parents and you might just be, if there was someone else in the room, it might be a different, yeah, you know, with actors and working with directors, your parents. So, is there an idea from this production that you wish to develop further, and you know, maybe when they're slightly older, or you can bring this forward in a few years' time? Another duet of another time?
Yeah, I think this was an experiment in, you know, to see what we could do, what's possible, you know, for us as parents at this particular, I mean, not just as parents but as people, and you know, at this stage in our lives. And I mean, I think some of the things that I liked about this production were the things that were not so straight, you know, the more slightly abstract things were, you know, where Paul's interactions with Lola, for example, those kinds of things. I think we can build on that to create something quite interesting.
Yeah, I as Kayleen mentioned, the performance very much captures a moment in time. We couldn't restage it as it was, even if we wanted to. And what interests me is to work on something that isn't quite so reliant on the moment, but that nevertheless captures that dynamic. You know, the fact is that very often most of the people on the stage in a show are broadly the same age, unless it's a family being depicted, and even then half the time the performers will not be as wide ranging in mm-hmm. as in age as the characters, and even though they'll be of the same demographic often, and the audience themselves will be often of broadly the same age. And so this point about creating a work that is very diverse in the composition of its participants, and also more than that, seeks to give equal voice, as it were, to the life experiences and imaginations and worldviews of those participants, mm-hmm. is something that I think is really interesting. And not just that, also say body sizes, you know. So when Kayleen says about some of the stuff that I did with Lola, at some level it's simply about what's it like to have someone my size and someone of Lola's size share a stage and explore that physical mm-hmm. relationship
mm-hmm.
without it becoming, in a way, domesticated into dance.
I mean, I think the dance was interesting, but I mean, I think it didn't work on many levels. I mean, you know, I think it was problematic, but I think that just having the different bodies on stage, I mean, I think there's something there, you know, to build on. But very soon, you know, the kids are probably going to be taller than me, so.
which then shifts the dynamic again, right?
I know. I mean, I think one of the strangest points in the rehearsal was when I first did the dance with my mother. You know, it's like, you know, mm-hmm. now I'm nearly 40 and my mom is like, you know, nearly 70, right? So it's like, you know, after so many years of, you know, having this mother-daughter relationship, and you suddenly go back to something where you're just like jumping around with your mother, you know, doing something that's quite childlike in a way, you know, it just feels quite strange.
Well, in a sense, it's the two of you doing a dance choreographed by your daughter, because
yeah.
it was mainly
oh,
Summer
oh,
who created yeah. that dance.
Oh wow, she created. Oh.
I don't have as much of a problem with the dances as you
yeah.
do. You think they didn't work, and
yeah.
a lot of the reviewers didn't, but I think they were just fine. I liked them as they were.
There were many different kind of energies on stage. How do you deal with all this energy and place them all together and make such a masterpiece out of everything? Because two different daughters, 6 and 8, very different energies, and with your mom and both of you, life experiences, how do you put that all onto stage and make sure that it actually works?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you can't really control it. The main aim is just to establish the right context or framework in which they can kind of coexist and work off
mm-hmm.
each other,
mm-hmm.
which of course, you know, that's what families are too, or that's what family life is. Not always to the good, of course, you know, all kinds of family strife and conflicts and generational problems also emerge out of this coexistence, but just establishing a set of activities or understandings or themes that everyone has a contribution to make, or a part to play in. That's the best thing you can hope for, I think.
How would you think that such a performance that you have done fit into what we have in Singapore right now in our theatre scene?
I think I mentioned earlier that there's a larger context in contemporary performances towards opening up the stage to non-professional performers of various kinds, or people of a greater demographic diversity than you might normally find in the same space in the theatre. And at some level, Singapore is reflecting that too. I think that there's more opportunities now for people to participate in theatre at different levels. Obviously, Kayleen's mum is a member of this Theatre for Seniors initiative that was started by The Necessary Stage, and there are several other groups of older performers, then children have various opportunities to participate in theatre, like Lola's involvement in the Wild Rice pantomimes. And so it's not as if it's completely unusual to have people of that age on stage. And in fact, earlier this year, there was also a performance at the substation by Shireen Abdullah and her father, Abdullah Tamugi, who's a former Speaker of Parliament, which I guess was about their father-daughter relationship, although we didn't see it. So I don't think it's entirely out of the blue, but I guess the particular approach that we took and the particular combinations of these individuals is what's most distinctive.
Okay. Any last words for this production? This is what people would hear when they're writing their essays and academic papers. Any quote, you might be quoted. Any last words of wisdom? What's the most memorable thing of the entire performance? Maybe one of you can share. An event, instance, a scene.
Well, I think during opening night, you know, and it was like the house was packed, and you know, it was still quite tentative and everything in the beginning, but then when I think it was the moment when Lola first spoke, the first time I was on stage, you know, I think the energy felt just right. And you know, and I just knew the show will be okay that night. and I think that, and then when Summer came on and she, with her ukulele thing, and you know, and she was like, you know, I could feel her energy, and she was really kind of buzzing from it all. And you know, then I thought, okay, it wasn't so crazy after all to try this out.
Yeah, I think along those lines, Summer's participation in the World Condo scene on the first night, which is very different to the one you saw, but luckily is the one that was videoed. It was literally someone just in the process of having this complete revelation about, on the one hand, the power of theatre and the way in which you could literally have an audience eating out, well, not literally, but practically have an audience eating out of the palm of your hand. But also for her, given that she wasn't doing it because she's a professional actress and all this kind of stuff, her own abilities, her own expressive or communicative or imaginative and inventive abilities as an individual and as a person. And I think that that probably can't happen, you know, you probably only ever experience that once, and most people probably don't experience it till later on, where they're already a bit more on top of things in their life, let's say when they're in a school play at the age of say 14 or 16 or something. Whereas to have that moment of revelation at this young age, I think, is quite special in a way. But then on the other hand, I'd say that the other thing that was quite gratifying to me was discovering that by comparison with that more anarchic element of the show, other parts of the show worked very precisely, and they worked well when they were precise. Again, the matinee is not a good example, because we were so thrown by Summer going on strike, effectively, from the ukulele part onwards, that I screwed up the timing and the lines and stuff. But the scene with Lola, getting her out of the house and moving around and all that kind of stuff, and with Zai's music in the background, when it clicks into place, there's a really high degree of precision and I hadn't realized that until we performed it live as well. So that was my own moment of discovery.
Yeah, I think there's one thing about you know, Summer's energy in particular on stage, and is that, you know, she was just fearless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She just threw herself into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, well, on the two shows, you know, there was, yeah, you know, this fearlessness that you know, I think, and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that kind of thing that I think actors need sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course we need discipline, but sometimes you just have to throw yourself into it.
Okay.
Which she did on two nights.
All right, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.